cool.
Okay, this is a online calling course call with Sonia and Sam, and we're just going to be talking about some of Sonia's exercises. So, actually, Sonia, why don't you tell me how you're doing? You know, last time we talked, I think a month ago, you were talking a little bit about what was going on with your business partner. Is there anything new?
Not much. It's still kind of going on. So, since we last spoke, he's just really acting very strangely. I had to go away on business. And while I wasn't here, he informed our team that I'm leaving without me being there or even knowing he was going to do that and without any agreement in place. It's really getting a bit toxic at the moment. So he's refusing to negotiate any further. He just wants to default to the auditor's valuation of the company. He sent his last offer to me about 2 weeks ago, and I just felt the Lord leading me to just take 21 days to fast and pray and just, I think he wants to work with me,
mm-hmm.
you know, change how I'm seeing all of this, not necessarily change the situation. So, mm-hmm. The 21 days will be up next Monday, so then I'll engage with him further.
I think what you're doing is wise, Sonia. I really like the approach of saying, God, what are you saying to me? Forget the money for a moment. What are you saying to me? So I think I told you that I had a similar situation about 5 years ago where I was negotiating with my partners, and they didn't treat me very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I settled before I settled what was going on in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it was going on, but I think it would have been wiser for me to do what you're doing. So I applaud you. I seriously
Thank
do.
You.
I really do. I think that God can always take care of us. He can always give us all that we need. And all that we really need is Him. So I love the way you're doing this.
Yeah, it's. I won't lie to you. It's not easy. Everything, and I think that's kind of what he's busy with. Because I would really love to be able to walk out of this company, and really wish them well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. I'm not quite there at the moment.
Oh, do I understand that?
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's, and, you know, God has shown me some things that, you know, in terms of, you know, myself and, you know, maybe how I've contributed to the situation and, you know, he's dealing with me on some issues. But, you know, then every now and again, so like, over the weekend, my business partner puts a Facebook status update on saying, if the Pope can resign and leave quickly, why can't other people do it?
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, it was like when I saw that, because one of the things that I'm fasting is social media. So I wasn't on Facebook. But then a friend of mine who knows this situation said, did you see the update?
Right.
And, you know, it's like I'm not going to be offended by this. I'm not taking offense. I'm not going to respond. I'm just going to, God, this is yours to deal with. But kind of in the back of my mind, I'm really, really itching to do something. So.
Hey, I so understand. And I guess, you know, my reaction here partly is, why can't this man just be direct and gracious? You know, it seems so, what's the right word? Passive aggressive to put something like that on Facebook. That's just it seems immature, you know, to be unable just to, anyway, I feel for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I must say, I think what I find the most confusing about this is that the person that I'm dealing with now seems like a complete stranger to me. because, you know, one of the things that, and the other thing is, you know, I really try to be, to really walk this out with God. And, you know, every time before I do something, I kind of get quiet first and say, must I do this? Shouldn't I do this? But every time I think that I'm doing something in obedience, it just kind of makes things worse. So I don't really know. But I mean, the other day, just after that, after he told our staff, I got an email. It was sent at 6:10 on a Sunday morning.
Mm.
Asking me if I've given any thought to timing and when I think my exit should be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent him an email back, and I said, you know, nothing has been decided yet. My exit depends on your offer.
Right.
As things are right now, I'm still a 50% partner in this company. So if and when I exit depends on us coming to an agreement.
Right.
And he threw all of his toys out the cot. He just said, he just threw a fit, essentially.
Yeah.
Because then he said, I'm being, I can't even remember the word, but essentially he just said, since when is it an if? And, you know, I'm now not acting in good faith anymore and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's, yeah, no, I don't know. I just, it's time for me to leave. That's
so, Sonia, let me ask you a question. I forget his name. What is his name? Just the first name.
Aiden.
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 Is he typically sort of a bully?
No.
But it seems like his behavior is being like a bully.
Yes.
It's sort of aggressive. It's picking. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, Sam, I don't want to over-spiritualize things.
Right.
But a couple of months ago, before all of this started, we had a difference of opinion in terms of a client. We were a paleontological NGO came to us and asked us if we can help them with determining the impact of their offerings.
Right.
And essentially what they do is they do it almost like drama, like industrial theater kinds of things. They go into the schools and they teach children evolution. And I just told my partner, I can't see us doing this project. I don't believe in evolution. Actually, it goes against everything that I believe in, and I don't think we should be doing this project. It wasn't even for a lot of money. It's actually for, you know, it was because they're an NGO, they can't
right.
really pay much.
Right.
And I really investigated this, and, you know, they told us that the main questions that they get after they do their performances are from religious people.
Uh-huh.
And I asked them, so what do they ask you? And they said, no, you know, they want to know how to reconcile this with religion. And the way that they answer the question is that the science is the truth, and the conflict is not between the science and religion. It's between the various religions' creation myths. And I told my partner, I vote to not do this project. If you decide to continue, then you must just know that there is a wall between me and this project. I don't want to know anything about it. I want nothing to do with it. I just, you know, this is just completely against everything I believe in.
Right.
And he decided to go ahead with it. And it feels to me as if in that kind of a compromise, that he opened a door. Because it's kind of after that happened, things just went completely pear-shaped. Still, I don't know.
Is he a man that wants to get his way? You know, in your dealings with him, was he good at compromising or talking that stuff out?
Not really, no. He's always been kind of pushy, but not a bully about it.
And how do you know, so looking back at your life, how do you deal with people who are sort of being unreasonable or pushy or bullying or something? Have you had to deal with that kind of person before?
Not too much, no, but I think my natural tendency would be to back off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things that God has shown me a bit over the last, let's say, year or so. You know, I think I have been deferring to Him more than I probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last, year or so. You know, he's pretty good at managing the company. So,
right.
And I don't really have much of a problem delegating. So if
right.
you're really good at managing cash flow, then I will just leave you alone to do it. You know, I'm not going to. And I think I probably taught him that I'm a bit of a pushover.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't enjoy conflict. And I don't know if that's something that God is trying to teach me through all of this, that I must, you know, I don't know. But I would typically just kind of back off and just let them.
Well, you know, it strikes me. Here's a biblical reference that strikes me in a certain sense. And it's David and King Saul. When David is actually helping King Saul, remember, David has won his 10,000s and Saul has won his thousands, and Saul gets angry. Even though David was originally brought to Saul to bring peace, he was a peacemaker. When Saul was in a fit, David would come and play the harp and sing and make music and bring peace. In some ways, I think you are the peaceful person in this. And, you know, I think there's a natural tendency in people sometimes to want to take over and to get angry at that person, even though you're doing the right thing. And in the end, God really vindicated David. So.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I tend to question what I think I hear from God when I'm hearing for myself. But I the other day I thought, well, let me, you know, I just got the sense from God that he said, I have made you a thorn in His flesh. And that's what I'm experiencing, you know. It's as if everything I do offends Him.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know.
Someday, Sonia, I have to tell you my story. There's so many parallels. It's amazing. But anyway,
I'd love to hear it, y'all. It's good to know that I'm not.
You'll
the
say
only
you
one.
Too. That's what I'm feeling when I hear you. I say you too. I understand this.
No. At least I don't feel lonely.
Right.
And you got through yours, so that gives me
hope. And, you know, in some ways, for me, it was very, very hard. My story is a little bit different. When I was growing up, I dealt with a lot of bullies, but mostly I'm talking about in grade school, so when I was in, you know, probably age 5 to 15 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the bullies weren't attacking me. I wasn't someone that people bullied necessarily, but they
mm-hmm.
bullied, you know, the weakling in school. And so in my in those days, people got into a lot of fist fights, and I got into a lot of fist fights, but I was fighting for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then my partner did sort of bully me a little bit. He tried to bully, and I just didn't know how to deal with it. I had never fought to protect myself, and I felt totally incapable of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that through this, God taught me to rely on Him and to say, in a little way, I had helped, you know, young boys at my school protected from the bullies. But God was saying, He is really the one that protects us. He protected
mm-hmm.
me. And I really believe He's protecting you. You know, He's in a certain sense, He's allowing you to be a thorn in the flesh to let this guy intimidate you or try to intimidate you, and that God is with you. God Himself is protecting you.
Yeah, and I guess that's what's been very difficult for me is discerning. You know, is this time for me to just rest and let God fight whatever fight there is to be fought, or is this a time for me to stand? Yeah, and I have to kind of discern that every day because I don't always know.
Well, my inclination is for you to stand, meaning do what you think is fair. You know, make proposals that are fair. This is a fair evaluation of the company. This is a fair exit strategy. This is a fair way to do it. And stand. You don't have to fight for it necessarily, but you can still stand on it and
mm-hmm.
let God fight for you. I don't think that we want to give in to someone who's being belligerent, but I don't know that we want to fight back. Well, I, you know, it depends. I don't know. But at this moment, my sense is stand, even though you're not trusting in your own standing, if that makes sense. And I will certainly pray for the situation more, for wisdom and strength and God's fighting for you.
Thank you. I can use all the prayer I can get at the moment. There are moments that I almost can't believe that I'm actually in this situation. You know, it's just,
right.
If you told me I was going to be here last year, I would have laughed at you.
Right.
So, it's, yeah, but anyway.
Well, let's go through some of your exercises.
Yeah.
So, I love your passion words. I also love, by the way, the fact that you picked 6 instead of 5.
Why? I thought I was breaking the rules.
I love it when somebody breaks the rules. So that's why I love it.
Okay, that's good to know.
So I was once in a small group. You know, we were doing this on a retreat. And there was, there was a man in my group who was just very, very passive. Very passive. And he had 6 words. And he says, I sort of have 6 words. Is it okay if I break the rules? I said, I'm not going to give you permission. If I give you permission, you're no longer breaking the rules. So you have to decide, are you going to break the rules because you think this is right or not? And you could just see this inner turmoil in this man who always did what was right. You know, he always followed every rule to the letter, to the T. And he finally said, I'm just going to do 6, period. And the whole small group cheered, you know, because sometimes we have to just do what God puts on our heart.
Mm.
So, now, I'm not talking about immorality, you know, but I'm talking about standing up. So I love it. That was my first observation. I love the fact that you broke the rules.
Thank you.
So as I look at your words, when I see awaken and release, to me, there feels like there's a similarity in those. And I just want to see, do you feel like there's a similarity in them? And if so, what would it be? And maybe you say, no, you don't.
I think that there's a connection between them.
Mm-hmm. Connection's a better word. I like that.
Yeah, because they do communicate slightly different things to me, but they are, but I can see why you'd say that there's a similarity or a connection between them. I mean, to me, they kind of both speak about, you know, awaken, and, or let me put it this way, that scene in The Lord of the Rings that I mentioned in my favorite movie scenes, where Gandalf frees Théoden from the curse.
I was thinking of the same thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's as if both of those concepts can be seen there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like this awakening from a sleep, or awakening from almost from the dead, I guess, you could say. But then also, so it's almost as if you need to awaken before you can be released.
Mm-hmm.
No, does it make sense?
It makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's why I kept both of them, because they communicate slightly different things to me.
And yet they're both, in some ways, freeing somebody to become who they're meant to be. One is sort of shaking someone awake to even be aware of it, and the second is sort of giving them the power to walk into it. I'm thinking. I'm putting words in your mouth, so you can react and...
No, I think those were pretty good words to put in my mouth. I think, you know, and on the one hand, you know, being someone who needs to be released, I guess the thing is that someone who needs to be released often know that they are captive.
Right.
Whereas someone who needs to be awakened is like they're not even aware of...
They're captive to their sleep, or they're captive to their deadness, and they're so captive that they're even unaware.
Yes, they're almost held captive by ignorance, if you want to call it that.
Sure, sure. I like that. No, I really like that. And to you, you want to do both. You want to awaken and release people. And be awakened and be released yourself.
Yes. I think my, if I have to describe my journey over the last year or so, it's probably been a journey of awakening. Mm-hmm. You know, discovering things that I didn't really know was there. And I think probably the season that I'm in now is one of needing to be released.
Literally.
Yeah, more ways than one. I think that kind of makes sense. You know, and I think if I'm, because where I'm at the moment is I now need, because of all these shifts, I now need to find something new to do.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the things that really fascinate me and that I'd love to do are, you know, developing workshops and things, for example, to help people, you know, to facilitate that awakening, to help them discover what is inside of them and who they really are.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. But then at the same time, I'm fascinated by things that will help them be released into that. You know, things like how do you develop healthy boundaries? How do you, you know, some of Henry Cloud's work on things like necessary endings and, you know, just almost the practical side of things that if, now that you've discovered who you are, now what do you do with it?
Right. And Sonia, I would say that in my working with people in calling, I find that both of those things that you're describing are equally important. I've dealt with a lot of people who finally become awakened to their desires, their passions, their calling.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't walk into it. It's sort of like there's almost two battles. One battle is to awaken people, and the second battle is to get people to actually walk into it. And that's one of the reasons I like your awaken and release. Release is, in some senses, an indication of now you can walk into it.
Mm.
It's one thing just to know what it is, but you can know what it is and then just sit there and say, oh, isn't this great? This is what I am. But if you don't do it, I don't think you're fully released. And I love your recognizing you want both.
Mm. I just find it amazing what you see in these things, because when I look at it, I don't see that. Or I see it now that you've kind of told me about how you see it, but I just thought those were cool words.
They are cool words. So why don't you talk to me about the next 4/5? Because you really broke the rules doubly, which I love.
Yeah, I will push boundaries if I have a chance. I don't know, beauty, I just find that beauty, it's something that I can't live without, or that I find myself drawn to, or if I need restoration myself, I'm always drawn to beauty. I think that's the, you know, so I love being outside in nature and flowers and, you know, anything that, you know, I'm just naturally drawn to beauty. That's possibility.
Let me ask you a question. I love the way you describe beauty, and I told you, I think, maybe I didn't, but I should have,
mm-hmm.
Your pictures were the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen. They were, I still have them sitting on my desk. I still have your piece of paper, you know, I printed them out. I still have them sitting on my desk because they were astounding. Why, I think beauty should move everybody. What is restorative? What helps you when you see beauty? What is it?
I think it probably speaks a bit to the creative side of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, I can't remember in which one of his books it is, but in, you know, John Eldridge speaks about longing for Eden or longing for how we think things should be.
Right.
And I think God, you know, it, one of the things when I see beauty is it really feels to me as if I'm closer to God. I think that's one of the, it's as if I see him in the beauty, and it's as if this is how things should be. You know, this is almost home, if you understand what I'm saying. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I'm very aware. So, for example, this whole thing of awakening and releasing, I can be very aware when things aren't as they should be. I think that it links to that truth and essence thing. When something is fake or when something is broken, I'm very aware of it. So I think that is why beauty is restorative. You know, it's because that's how it should be. That was the original intent, the original design. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Oh, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. There was a famous American composer whose name I don't remember. Oh, I should. I think that you would recognize him. And he was an atheist. He was a devout atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But one time at a famous television interview, he said, "When I hear Beethoven's Fifth, I feel like there's something right with the world, that somehow there's been an inner healing of the world."
Mm.
Which is sort of what you're saying, is you're seeing beauty and you say, there really is a purpose. There's some, that's the way things should be. There's something right with the world. And it gives you hope.
Mm.
Anyway, I love that. Okay.
Yeah, that whole concept of hope, it kind of links to that possibility as well.
Right.
You know, it's something that really bugs me is when people are stuck, when they can't see possibility, when they're kind of just stuck in the status quo or stuck in their captive state, and they can't see beyond that. You know, that to me, that's just wrong. Because I believe everyone has a calling and everyone has a purpose and everyone is unique.
Right.
And they bring something of God that nobody else can. So there has to be hope for everyone to live a more meaningful life. Possibility is... Mm-hmm.
Well, I think possibility goes along with awaken and release as well. Meaning, you can be released because there is a possibility of being free. There, you know, you don't like the negative people, you don't like the selfish people, you don't like the people, because negativity and selfishness in some ways is imprisoning. It's keeping us from being able to do the impossible or something.
Mm.
But possibility is freeing. You know, that's why it has hope. Anyway, I really love your words.
Thank you. Yeah, I like them as well. yeah, and truth and essence is, I don't know, I've just always had a thing. I don't know, it's just a pet peeve for anything that's fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wouldn't buy a ring with a fake diamond in it,
mm-hmm.
even if nobody else knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not right. You know, I don't like people who pretend to be something that they're not. And I think part of my calling is helping people discover the truth about themselves. You know, one of the things that really irks me is when I can so clearly see somebody believing a lie about themselves. So that truth or essence was that's where that comes from.
And usually when they believe a lie about themselves, isn't that lie something that's imprisoning them in some senses? It's keeping them from doing what they could do?
Mm. Yeah, that's typically what they need to be released from.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I like, you know, later on in one of your exercises, you summarize things and you say that you value authenticity, which, again, goes along with truth and essence. I think being with someone who's authentic, not fake, or not believing a lie.
Mm. Yeah, and, pretentious people, Yeah, I don't know. I just, there's just something that just, it's, I find it really off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, in a sense, they're also not living up to, you know, so even if they are really famous or really, you know, good at what they're doing, if they're like that, then they're also not living up to who they really are. It's as if they're diminishing themselves by doing that.
So explain that. So you're saying, let's say it's a famous person who's pretentious and they're not living up to who they are. I like where you're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you mean? Because on one hand, if they're famous, you know, it looks on the outside like they're successful. Some people could say, well, they are living up. Look at how famous they are. Look how successful
mm-hmm.
they are. But you don't like the pretentiousness.
No, because I think if they were really in touch with their true identity and if they were really living who they are, they wouldn't need to be pretentious.
Right.
It's in that feeling as if you need to pretend or need to put up a false front of how wonderful you really are.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that there's somewhere deep inside you don't really believe that you're successful. Or, you know, you're not really in touch with who you really are.
Yep, you're still living according to the lie.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, so it's
one of my favorite verses in scripture is in Philippians 2, I think it's verse 3 or 4, but it says, do nothing from selfishness or empty glory. And in a certain sense, mm-hmm. I think some of the reason people push so hard to be successful is the very thing you're talking about, is they believe that they're empty. They believe there's nothing there, so they have to try to prove something to the world.
Mm.
And, you know, you feel it sometimes from them when they're doing something. It doesn't feel authentic, as you're saying.
Mm.
But I think that when we actually are authentic, we sense God's love and grace and care and beauty that he's put in us. Then we can do it without having to prove something, without that pretentiousness, without hiding that empty feeling in us. I think. I really like where you're going with this.
Yeah, and I think I would rather be with someone, this is going to sound funny, but kind of who's authentically rude
mm-hmm.
than someone who is trying to be nice.
Absolutely. I agree. I can deal with someone who's rude because at least they're being real.
Yes.
You know, if they're rude to me and say, Sam, I don't like your clothes, I'll say, great, you know what, I probably don't like them either. I mean, we could just be real.
Yes. Yeah. And it's as if I have a bit of a radar for that. You know, I pick it up when people aren't being real. We were talking about honor the other day,
mm-hmm.
as almost one of the kingdom culture pillars. And you know, one of the things that came out is if you don't believe, if you don't see yourself as God sees you, if you're not walking in your real identity, if you don't see that. Well, if you don't see that you're royalty in a sense, you know, you're a child of the king. You know, he gives you everything that you you need, and he fills you. Then you can't authentically honor somebody else,
mm-hmm.
because then it's coming from that place of emptiness. You know, there's kind of a, you know, you'll always still be comparing yourself to that person.
Right.
So there's a, I think. All of this kind of goes back to wanting people to discover who they really are. You know, God reminded me of another scene in The Lord of the Rings the other day where the Elf King gives Aragorn the newly mended sword. I don't know
right.
if you remember that.
Yes, I
and
do.
And he tells him, put aside the ranger and become who you were born to be.
Right.
And that's kind of... I think that speaks to me of this whole truth and essence thing.
That's good. So go on to create.
Create, in a sense, is linked for me to possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I think create just... creating is very much part of who I am, whether it's physically creating something, so painting or taking a photograph or something like that, or just creating new ideas, creating possibilities, creating connections between things. It's just very much part of who I am. I think you would have picked it up in some of the rest of the exercises as well, is that I love being involved with new things.
Right. You don't like routine, doing the same thing over and over and over again.
No. I'm also not a very good finisher, which sometimes works against me, because, you know, it doesn't really help if you've got all these wonderful ideas and you know, you can't bring them to fruition. But, I just love the, you know, that kind of, the possibility of creating something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very much part of who I am.
I understand that. I am more of a creator than a finisher as well.
Mm.
And fortunately, when I was in business, I had a partner. I had two partners. One of them was sort of the bully guy. The other guy wasn't. And he was not someone who was creative the way I am. You know,
mm-hmm.
What thrilled me would be to start a new project, to start a new division, to start something the company had never done, or to take something that was failing, a division that was failing or a project that was failing, to take it on and turn it around. So either to start something or to turn something around. Now, in American school grading system, we're given, you know, 100%, 90%, 80%. I don't know if you use those.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on a test, you might get 95%.
Yeah.
For me, I could take a project, division, whatever, and either turn it around or start it. But when I got it to about 75 or 85%, I started to get bored with it, honestly. You know, this is sort of, it was sort of good enough. I wanted to go off and start something new or turn something else around, take it from 20% to 80%. Now, my partner, he couldn't start or turn around anything. He just couldn't. But if you gave him something that was 75 or 80%, he just was in his element to turn it around and make it 100%.
Mm.
So he and I were actually very good partners, because I would take something, and when I got sick of it, meaning it was pretty good at that point.
Yes.
I'd give it to him, and he'd get excited because he could see ways to turn it and make it, you know, an A-plus or 100%.
Mm.
So I think there's a similarity between you and me in that way. You need to find a partner who can, you know, you bring something to 80%, and you get a partner who takes it from 80% to 100%. Because that's a different kind of creativity, I guess.
Yes, and I think I also need someone that can help me focus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do tend to, I find so many things interesting. I tend to go on rabbit trails.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, you know, so focus is not one of my strong suits. And I realize that I need to, you know, have somebody next to me that can help me focus. Because I just, you know, when I see a new connection between things that I didn't see before, it's very easy for me to just jump over and pursue that.
Right.
And leave what I'm always reading like 3 or 4 books at one time. And some I never finish because, you know, another one gets more interesting before I get to the finish, of, you know, to the end of the one I'm busy with. So,
yep.
Yeah.
I understand that.
But creating is, and I think that's part of the reason why this whole thing with my business partner hurt so much, because that was the side that he said, we don't need that anymore. The business has outgrown your creativity. That's essentially what he said. And I think because it's so much part of who I am, you know, that really hurt, I think.
And, you know, I think that is, you had talked, you like the assault stuff in Gary's book. the assault on a calling. It sounds to me very much like this is an assault on your calling. You know, the very thing that you bring is the thing he's saying that's not needed, and that's an assault on your calling.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know the very thing that you bring is so necessary.
Yeah. And I think for me to, I just need to keep on believing that, because he, you know, the other thing is something that I'm really good at doing,
mm-hmm.
is seeing connections between things and almost, I just want to say, synthesizing things. So, you know, seeing, for example, some of this work that, you know, some of this process that we've just been going through,
right.
connecting with some of Viktor Frankl's work on meaning,
mm-hmm.
connecting with some of the narrative work we've been doing. You know, all of these disparate things, when it comes together, there's just something really kind of unique there. But the message that I kind of keep hearing and that I have to keep kind of fighting against is, but there's nothing new here. There's nothing unique. You know, this is all just other people's thinking. Now, you can't go to market with this. It's, you know, do you understand? There's like this, why can't you think up your own thing?
And I do think those are lies, because, I mean, on one hand, Scripture says nothing is new under the sun. On the other hand, you have your own way of articulating it, you have your own way of expressing it, you have your own way of connecting things that other people won't have. God has just given you a unique perspective. I mean, I would say that was certainly true for me. I before I started blogging, I thought, I don't have anything new to say, because every idea I have, I can find other quotes where somebody's already said it better. But I felt like God just said he wanted me to say it in my own words, not to worry about whether it was better or unique. It was to use my experience or my words or whatever. And I find that I just love doing it. I just love to do it. And I suspect for you, as you do it, you know, it's lies that it's not new, because you have your own perspective. You have your own facet that you're looking at this world through that's different than anybody else's, and I think it is helpful for people. There's a real truth inside you that I think needs to be expressed to the world.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, as you said, where the assault is coming now, is trying to get me to keep quiet.
Right.
And to not express it.
Right. Gary, when he has the assault, he says there's four Ds. There's distancing, diminishment, disdain, and disqualification.
Mm.
And it sounds like the one you're hearing is the diminishment. You know, it isn't that much. It's nothing new. Would anyone else want to hear what I say?
Yeah. No, it definitely is that one. And sometimes I find it quite paralyzing. It's as if it keeps me from starting.
So give me an example of a time that you think that you felt sort of paralyzed by it, or at least anesthetized.
Well, in a sense, it's where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find myself with all of these ideas of things I want to develop and workshops I want to do. But it's as if I keep putting off actually starting with it, because it's as if I keep looking for, well, what is that original thought that needs to come?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I keep reading more books or thinking more, and you know, and not actually engaging with it and just starting to do it.
So what would be an example of something you could start to do?
Well, in my coaching, something that I'm seeing a lot of is that people, this is one of those practical things, people just don't know how to set boundaries.
Right.
They don't know how to not take responsibility for other people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I've been playing around with is to, because, do you know Henry Cloud's work?
I don't know Henry Cloud's work, so it certainly made me want to, because I like everything else you've got. I love Viktor Frankl. I just love him, and I've never had anyone else say they love him the way you said it. So, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so he wrote a book called Boundaries.
You know what? I know the book Boundaries. I didn't remember the name, so I read Boundaries. Yes.
Yes. Now, it's like a small group thing that they developed, but it's very much church or faith-based at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that, you know, I think that there really is a need in the marketplace for that message, that they won't read the book because it's a Christian book.
Right.
But to put together like a 1 or 2 day workshop, because I just see, you know, this is one of those areas where people don't step out into their callings or into their passion because they're stuck with other people's responsibilities.
Yes, yes.
So that was one. That's one of the things that I was thinking, that because, you know, the material already exists. It just kind of needs to be translated into more of a business language and packaged into a workshop. So that's one of the things that I could probably immediately do.
So you do some coaching for people. Is
mm-hmm.
this sort of the life coaching thing? Do you do it over the phone? Do you do it face-to-face? How does it work?
Mostly face-to-face. And it's life coaching in a sense, but it's strengths-based coaching.
Okay.
But I enjoy doing it. But, you know, I so resonated with I think it was Gary, he wrote at some stage, he either wrote or spoke about it, that he loves coaching, but he doesn't want to be a coach.
Right.
And he loves training, but he doesn't want to be a teacher. No,
right.
I'm very much there. You know, I enjoy coaching, but that's not what I want to do forever,
right,
and all the time. So, yeah.
Well, I encourage you to try it, to do something with this boundaries concept of bringing it to the marketplace. And just, you know, as you said, you have one of your difficulties is you have so many things you're interested in, and I understand that, but I'd say try, pick one. I think boundaries sounds like a really good example, and I don't know, maybe you do invite them to a 2-day workshop, maybe you have it on a Thursday evening for, you know, 5 weeks in a row, or you figure out baby steps before giant steps. Maybe you write it down and ask people to read it and comment on it. I don't know, but I like where you're going with it as an experiment. You know, it doesn't mean that you will be the world's business expert on boundaries, but maybe it will. But just an example of you being able to create something, really try. I think you'd find it exhilarating. And maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you'd find that you dislike it, but that would just be one more dot to connect.
Mm.
I like where you're going with that. I really do. I completely agree that it's something that holds so many people back, even, you know, non-believers as well, of course.
Mm. Yeah, I think I need positive momentum in my life now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the other thing. You know, this thing with my business partner has, in a sense, you know, because I kind of feel as if I'm in limbo.
Sure.
While it hasn't been resolved, and it does feel like an ongoing spiritual battle. It's a Yeah, at one stage I felt like I was being assaulted by Jezebel. I felt like
mm-hmm.
like who's that prophet that went and hid from her?
Yeah, Elijah.
Yes. Because I just felt this like a spirit of intimidation coming against me, and you know, it's in that place I don't really feel like creating. But it's probably what I actually need to do to get out of that place.
Well, and that's partly the reason I do like you're taking this 21-day fast. You know, in some ways, that's what Elijah did. He ended up going down to the Sinai. He was taking a fast. In fact, God had to feed him. If God sends an angel and just cooks bread for him
mm-hmm.
before he sends him down to the mountain where he hears God in a still, small voice. And so I like your fast, but I also like the forward momentum you're talking about. It's just doing something.
Yeah.
It feels right to me.
Yeah, because I realize that I can't just, you know, waiting on God is not sitting passively. I realize that as well.
Right.
I didn't want to just get going with the first idea that popped into my head, because I also don't want to go on a tangent. You know, I see this as an opportunity to, you know, for, you know, to really step into whatever it is that God wants me to do now. You know, like what His assignment is. So I don't just want to jump onto the first thing that comes and, you know, just to have something to do and a way to earn an income. But then, yeah, I realize that I kind of need that forward momentum as well to just know that I'm still here.
I think that doing something is a good, you know, it doesn't mean that you're jumping into it and that you're abandoning everything else, but I think most of the time, not always, but most of the time, doing something is better than doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still be waiting on the Lord while you're doing something. You know, because you commit your plans to the Lord, and then He'll direct your path. So you say, God, this is the way I'm going. I commit it to you. And then maybe He'll steer the car to the right or to the left. But starting with something, I think, is a good idea. It's a way of waiting on the Lord, I believe.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, seriously, if you get ideas of an outline or anything like that, jot them in an email and send them to me. And I would love to hear what you have to say about it.
Okay.
I would love your perspective on it.
I will do that.
I'm very serious about it. I would love it. So.
Okay. Now I'm also serious. I will take you up on it.
Okay.
One of the things that I at some stage wanted to chat to you and Gary about is if you didn't feel like planning a trip to South Africa and coming and doing one of your retreats here.
Well, let me tell you. Meeting you on the phone certainly makes me want to do that. I think you've got just a great heart for this whole message.
Yeah, so but we can discuss that later. I don't want to derail the call.
Right. So, you know, you have more pages of stuff. Why don't we, if you don't mind going through some of the things, you know, you don't have to go through every movie necessarily, but go through some of the movies and the books and things that have been speaking to you.
Okay, so we've already spoken about Lord of the Rings.
Right, and you spoke really about both of them.
Aragorn
getting the sword and Gandalf freeing King Theoden.
Yes, I think, but those movies are so rich. You know, I watch the all three extended versions once a year. There's just something in those movies that just speaks to me. So, but those were the two that kind of was top of mind now.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Matrix, it just feels like a really prophetic movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, have you seen The Matrix? Do you?
Oh, yes, I like it.
Okay. And it's that the first movie towards the end where Neo was dead and then he comes back to life and then he realizes who he is.
Right.
And he just says no to the bullets. I don't know, that scene, I can just watch that over and over again. It just, that just also speaks truth to me. It's as if that is what the Christian life is supposed to be like. That level of authority, that just knowing who you are to such an extent that you can do the impossible.
And you know, this just dawns on me as you're saying that, but it really goes along with awaken and release. So when Neo is freed from the Matrix, he's sort of awakened, but it's only when he realizes who he really is that he's finally released.
Mm.
So,
yes. Yeah.
Anyway, your words and your passions really are consistent.
I'm glad to hear that. Otherwise, I would be even more confused. And then just the Narnia movies. I just, you know, that I often, you know, the the Lion of Judah, the picture of Jesus is the lion. It's just, it's something that really resonates with me. There's something in me that resonates with warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the Aragorns of the world and the, and just the image of the lion, it just really speaks to me. And especially that one scene, once again, it's somebody being freed.
Right. You're right.
But yeah, but all of the Narnia movies. And then some of the books, I think, yeah, so, I mean, Gary's book was really profound for me. A lot of John Eldridge's work is as well, and I think it's because of how he uses story and metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of what I do in my business at the moment, but the use of story and metaphor typically speaks to me. I loved Waking the Dead.
That was my favorite of all his books.
Yes.
Was Waking the Dead. That resonated with me more than any of his.
Yeah, and it was a wake up call in a sense, you know. And I think what it communicated was possibility. I think,
mm-hmm.
And you know, like what is the Christian life really about? And there has to be, because I think that when I read that book, I was really in that place of, but there has to be more than this, what I'm currently experiencing. And then I've kind of always had a fascination with, since I was quite young, with spiritual warfare. I read Rebecca Brown's books as well, but those were a bit too hardcore for me. But just the, you know, I don't really operate with, you know, for me, everything is spiritual. And it's not, I don't necessarily see the devil or a demon behind everything, but it's just this awareness that, you know, it links a bit to John's work as well, is there's a real enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is spiritual. You know, everything you do has a spiritual impact, whether you're kind of aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I loved, I don't know if you read This Present Darkness.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and I just loved how he integrated the real world with the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, so I love that. I also love fantasy. I think that's where the whole thing of the Lord of the Rings and, you know, the whole stories that are quests. I think it links a bit to epic, you know, John Eldridge epic, but those, you know, the big stories where, you know, you have to destroy that ring. Otherwise, you know, the world rests on you destroying the ring. That kind of I've always loved fantasy. Adventures, mystery, magic. I've always been pretty careful what I read because I realize that not all fantasy is necessarily good, but I can very easily escape into fantasy world. I just quickly want to close the window here because my husband's using a grinder outside.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there are quite a few books coming out of, I don't know if you know Bethel Church, Bill Johnson's church in Reading.
Yes, I do.
Yes. Now, that message of, you know, the supernatural and understanding who you are, you know, like that book by Chris Vallotton about the supernatural ways of royalty, those just, it once again, it speaks to that thing of there has to be more than what we're currently seeing or currently living. You know, there's always more to God that we can see.
Right.
And there's more to us than we know. That's kind of and Viktor Frankl's thing, the whole thing around meaning. You know, we do a lot of work in corporates and outside of corporates as well. And it's just a pervasive thing that I'm just noticing is that people have lost their sense of meaning. Their sense of purpose, you know, they go to work and it's just a job.
So expand on that. What do you mean by meaning and purpose?
The best way that I can do this is through an example. You know, it's I always believed that the best teachers were. It was almost, you know, they were almost called to be teachers. And I know it doesn't...
No, you know, I understand, yes.
Your definition, but, you know, teachers and doctors and nurses, you know, that they... It's a calling. So it's not, you know, for them, it's not about just earning a lot of money because I'm a doctor. It's because they really want, you know, they find meaning in it. They, for them, it's about saving someone's life or healing someone or... teaching, you know, really imparting something to the next generation. And, you know, there's that sense of calling and purpose. And I just see nowadays, most of the people that I come across, it's just, you know, they're a teacher because it's the only job they could get.
Right.
They don't really care about the kids. There's no passion for it. You know, they don't have any passion for it. They just do it because it's a job and they live for the paycheck. That's kind of the... And then in corporate life, you so often see people, they don't understand where they fit in the value chain. They don't... You know, the company that they work for, they can't really see what the higher purpose is. So they just sit there every day and press a button to release invoices on SAP or something. You know, there's just no sense of purpose or meaning. You know, it's just meaningless to them.
So let me give you an example and see if this resonates.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked for a company. We wrote software in a little market niche, and I hired someone to be our documentation manager. So he was going to write our, you know, help manuals, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a poet. So by training and by education, by experience, he was a poet. He really is quite a good poet. But you don't make much money being a poet.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to get a job in writing so at least he could make some money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just sort of went through the motions, you know, because his passion was writing poetry, not writing software documentation.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just good. And so our documentation got better. And I remember getting an email from a client who, when they got a new release of the documentation, they sent me an email and said, this is so helpful. It's changed the way our staff is working because, you know, we now understand the software better. So I took this email to the poet, and he started to cry. And he said, you know, I just have been writing this. I've been going through the motions, was sort of what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, the fact that it changes somebody else's life is amazing. He said, when I write poetry, I want to change people's lives. But the fact that I can change people's lives, even with documentation, moves him. In other words, he went from going through the motions to often saying, my job has meaning. I can affect other people's lives. I can help them.
Mm.
And it revolutionized the way he approached work. Because in some ways, in some very small way, I mean, the fact that he's writing software documentation is not the greatest meaning in the world. But he saw a connection between what he was doing and enhancing other people's lives and, you know, in their job. And I think that's part of what you're talking about. Some people are just pushing buttons, doing invoices. But if you can find a meaning, if you can find a purpose, if you can find that you're changing the world, if you're helping people, it makes a huge difference.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. And the thing is, the answer for him wasn't to go out and look for another job.
Right.
It was to find the meaning that was already there.
Yeah, that's just a very good way to put it.
Yeah, you know, so changing how you look at it, because I see so many people, they just go from, you know, they start hopping from one job to the next job to the next job, or they you know, they throw themselves into hobbies or substance abuse, all kinds of things, because they find, you know, that they live this purposeless not life.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize that that's Viktor Frankl's message. You know, the meaning is already there.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to find it. And I think that's because there are so many people who are stuck in jobs that they are just really unhappy in.
Oh, yeah.
And toxic corporate environments that I think if, and especially, you know, like middle managers, you know, that supervisor level, if they can realize the impact that they have on people below them, and if they can find that sense of meaning, I think you can transform workplaces. So that's, I think it may sound a bit ambitious, but I'm pretty passionate about this whole meaning thing at the moment. And I think on the one hand, what I'm talking about in a sense is, when I say purpose, is this whole message of calling,
mm-hmm.
but in corporate speak.
Yeah. I'm thrilled, by the way you talk about this.
Because the thing is, I think that you can open people's hearts to God by through this discovering your purpose, discovering your calling, your true identity. You don't, and the idea would not be to evangelize them, but to just open them up a little bit so that the next person that comes across their way, that they open to the Holy Spirit.
I agree with you. In the end, if someone finds their purpose, well, if we have a purpose, that means there was someone who designed us to have a purpose, which means there has to be a God. So if somebody finds their purpose, they're going to start understanding that there was a master architect. So I agree. I think that evangelism does not always have to be giving them the four spiritual laws. I think very often evangelism is just helping them find out who they are. And the only way in the end that you can do that is finding God. The deepest way to find who you are. So I like that.
Yeah, so I definitely feel, you know, I love being in ministry context, but I definitely feel that probably my assignment is in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And taking some of these, you know, like I've been, you know, I look at those, at Gary's book, and immediately my question is, how do I translate this into business speak? Because this message needs to go into the marketplace. So how do you translate it without losing its essence? That's kind of how do you keep the kingdom principles, but kind of remove the overtly Christian elements of it so that you can kind of covertly take it into corporate environments?
I think it's a fabulous thing for you to do.
Mm.
I do. I mean, you talked about the same thing with boundaries. You were using almost the identical language there.
Mm.
You know, you're taking a Christian concept and bringing it to the corporate world. My experience, and maybe I don't know what it's like in South Africa, but in America, at least at the moment, in the United States, people are sort of open to spiritual stuff more so than they were maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And so, you know, I think that if you said, I think that you could bring a message of assault and say, you know, there are forces that want to keep you from being who you are. And I think people could perhaps resonate with that. I'm not sure. You know your environment better.
So I do think that they're open to spiritual stuff, but
right.
They're not open to any specific faith.
Right.
That's the... So it definitely, there's a fine line there. I think also to not come across as too new agey, but to keep the essence of it and to keep the truth of it, but to just tone down the overtly Christian elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not ashamed of being Christian.
I know you're not.
I just feel there's so many things that, you know, truths that we sit with that's so needed in the marketplace, but that just never gets there.
Now, I have about 10 more minutes, and then I have to get in my car and go somewhere. I'm on page 2. This is so rich.
Always happen. Do I talk to...
want to go in the last 10 minutes? Do you want to do the rich uncle exercise? Or it doesn't have to be it.
Yeah, I think the rich uncle exercise kind of sums it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there it's just because of the very rich uncle and money not being an issue. I think it was just, you know, so at the moment my real thinking is just around, you know, developing workshops and taking it into corporate environments, etc. But I would love to have a retreat center,
right,
where people could come for, you know, to get out of those corporate environments, come and to a place that's beautiful, where they can really connect with who they really are. You know, just get quiet. I'd love to, and this is part of the planning for this as well, is to combine some of the arts, you know, right brain thinking
right,
into this as well, because I think there's something that happens when you physically create something. So an idea, for example, with those lies that you believe about yourself, those messages of diminishment, et cetera, in visual journaling, there's a technique that they use where you write down those statements on a canvas or on a piece of paper, and then you actually paint over them. You cover them with paint to say that this is over now. And then you create something beautiful, or you create a new statement of who you really are on top of it. And it's like a creative expression of, you know, leaving the past behind.
Right.
Things like that, I think, can be extremely powerful. So, yeah, that would be like the dream, would be to have a place where these workshops are run, where people can come and retreat, where there are art retreats happening at the same time. Corporate people as well as church groups, you know, because I think this, you know, this message, as needed as it is in the corporate world, is definitely needed in the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the people that I come across have no idea what their calling is. So, yeah, that. And then I think the other thing is that I would love to, all of these things, to almost put it into a trainer or a leadership development, you know, so that it can, because I can only do so many workshops,
mm-hmm, right,
so that it can spread. I like to work with leaders more than, you know, it's just something that I know about myself, is I like to work with people in leadership or people who are able to take the message and run with it, not necessarily people who need to hear the message over and over and over again to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're leveraging your own skills and abilities by doing that.
Mm-hmm. And I realize it can't start there, but that's kind of where I would hope for it to go. So that's in very high level, the rich uncle.
Well, this is probably the most detailed rich uncle I've seen. I'm trying to think if there's anyone that's coming even close. You describe the people that you want to address, you know, Christians who need to be set free, business people who find themselves in jobs they hate, and a third group of people are people who are really at a low point. And really, they're all three very so similar.
Mm.
But then you have an excellent description of the way you would want to bring healing to them through your workshops, through your creative right brain exercises. And then you move on to say, I want to do train the trainer type of things, you know. So I like your summary. I'm starting to see that my calling is more about raising up others. That's awakening and releasing, helping them find their callings and reaching out to the lost that way. So you want to help them so that they can help others.
Mm.
In fact, you end it, in a sense, multiplying my impact, magnifying that through others. That's a very good statement.
Where do you see that? Oh, yeah, at the end.
Very last two sentences.
Yeah. I've forgotten that I wrote that. Yeah, I think I've, you know, I have kind of felt guilty in the past for not really being, having this big evangelist heart, you know, wanting to go out and save the lost. But I do think, you know, if more and more people can be released into their calling and who they really are, then more and more people will go into the field to evangelize, hopefully, and make a difference in the world. Or not, it's not even just evangelize, but just go out and make a difference in other people's lives. People that I would never be able to touch. But that as long as they're stuck not knowing what their calling is, they're also never going to get there.
But you know what you're talking about is very much the way Jesus himself operated. He was not mainly saying, hey, everybody, come to the synagogue on Saturday. He was going out into the normal, I mean, look at his situations. He talks to the tax collector at the tax collector booth. He talks to the fishermen in their boats. He's out in the wilderness, and he's feeding people right where they are. He's seeing the sick person and healing the guy who's blind. I mean, he is literally out there, and he's not just preaching the four spiritual laws. You know, he's healing people right where they are. Mm-hmm. And then he's magnifying his efforts by training the trainers. You know, the very thing that you're saying. You know, when you say you're feeling guilty about not being evangelistic, it seems to me that you're very evangelistic. Sort of the way that's, Jesus was. If Jesus was evangelistic, I think you could say he was.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you see? Jesus went into the business world. Jesus went out. He went out to where people are doing their normal lives. And that's sort of where you want to take this. I think that's...
Yeah.
Fabulous.
I think I just have a skewed view on what evangelism is.
I think we all do. I think that's the modern church.
Yeah, because I think when I think evangelism, I see like Reinhard Bonnke.
Right.
Yeah. And
some people have those gifts. That's okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's just I've never even taken anybody through the spiritual laws. That's just It's never been who I am. you can start feeling guilty about that. But I think I'm kind of over that now. So, I think I said on the forum, I wish I really had a rich uncle. And then the one lady said, yeah, but you actually do.
Right, exactly. Well, and you know, there's that famous parable of the parable of the talents where, you know, the rich guy gives one guy five, and talents, of course, meant money, not skills, but he gives one guy five talents, one guy two talents, one guy one talent. There's also a 10, 5, and 1, I think, but... And then he comes back, and the guy who had taken 5, he invested it, and now he had 10. But the guy who had 1 didn't do anything. Mm. And Jesus says to him who has been faithful in little, much will be given.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happens with a lot of people who get paralyzed and they don't do anything in their calling is they expect to have 5 talents. They're saying, why didn't you give me the bigger, you know, why didn't you give me the $10 million rich uncle? And I think God says, you know what, start. The guy who had 5 talents originally only had 1. And he started small, and then he grew, and then he had 2, and then he had 5, and then he had 10, and then he had 20. I really think that you have something you can start right now with bringing to the business world either the boundaries concept or maybe some of the calling concept or mixing them together and starting small with maybe some of the people you're coaching. And I believe God will bless it. And as you're faithful in small things, God will give you much, much more. I really do. I mean, you do have a rich uncle, and he's giving you your inheritance maybe in bits and pieces as opposed to all at once. But I say you should do it. It seems to me it's like of God.
Thank you. I think it's good to hear that. Because I do think you can get so stuck into should I or shouldn't I, and is this what I should be doing, and what, you know, do I need to wait? Do I need, you know, and then you just do nothing.
And then you do nothing. I know that so well. But I think that you have something to do right now. And that, hey, I know Gary and I and the people at Secret Garden, we're going to want to help each of us take one step at a time and do it and see it magnify. I really believe that. This is not just rah-rah. This is, I think you have something to offer. that I want to see offered?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you say it, because the thing is, I believe that there is something. But then all those, you know, the thoughts come, and then I start doubting if there really is something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to hear you say that you also think so, and, you know, you understand the message already, yeah, it means a lot.
Well, good. I mean, I really believe it. So I want to see it.
Okay, you need to start going.
I do, but I really want to encourage you maybe to take some time over the next month or two just to say, what is something you could start? And pick
mm-hmm.
anything. It's almost not like there's the one thing. Just start something. I know that you're always starting something, but I would love to see you start some way to bring this to the corporate world. I think
mm-hmm.
there's something in you that God has put there, this strong desire to do it. It's interesting because
yeah.
Gary and I talk with a lot of people, and a lot of people have said to Gary and to me, they said, you should bring this to the corporate world. I mean, I bet I've heard it 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
You were the first person, I have to ask Gary, but in my experience, you're the only person who's ever said, I want to bring it to the corporate world. That's very, very different. There's something God has put on your heart.
Yeah, and I think it's because I see the brokenness in the corporate world,
mm-hmm.
Up close and personal, and I see what it does to people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, it's not right. It's not how it should be.
Right.
God created work and He blessed it. You know, it's just not how it should be.
It's not
and,
how it
you know,
be, I agree.
And I think this is kind of where the warrior thing comes out, is I don't think that it's right that the devil just takes the corporate world and we let him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not, why must it be like that? So yeah, it's, but yeah, I'd love to hear like Gary's thoughts on this as well. If you say that many people, I mean, what was your response when people told you could take it into the corporate world?
You know, Gary's response was he didn't feel like that was his passion. He loved it. He wants someone to do it. But
mm-hmm.
he said he can't be someone he's not. He feels like this is the way he's doing what God has asked him to do. And so he'll often say, well, maybe God is calling you to do it. But, you know, that's not the way people have started it. You're the first person who said you want to bring it to the corporate world. That's the thing that's different. Other people have said, Gary, why don't you, Gary, bring it? You're saying, Gary, I, Sonia, want to bring it. That's a very different message. And it's
mm-hmm.
actually very consistent with Gary's book.
Yeah, because it would be great to, you know, if I do get started on this, to kind of have his blessing and to be able to get input.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll talk to Gary, and let's make sure that we both talk to Gary next time.
Yes. So what are we talking about next time?
Well, I'll send you an email. My inclination, I have to confirm this with Gary. I didn't get a chance to talk to him this morning because he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
But my inclination is I would love to see your final write-up, the chapter 11, I think it is, of the handbook, of the guidebook, that asks you to make a calling statement. So if you remember, this is in a Word document. You know, most of the guidebook has been a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
But we had chapter 11, I'm pretty sure it's chapter 11, where we ask you to write out your calling statement. So if you could just give us the whole document.
Okay.
There's a few questions in there that it asks. So I know that we'll want that. I just don't know if we'll want you to do some other things as well.
Okay. Well, it's fine. You can send me an email.
Okay.
I'll just, you know, in the last while I've kind of, you know, in our discussions as well, discovered new things. So I'll probably need to just revisit that document.
Of course. That is the beauty of doing this.
Mm.
I think we keep revisiting it. I've revisited my exercises and my five words several times, just to refine them a little bit as I get better understanding.
Yes. Okay, so I'll wait to get an email from you then. And then we can fix a date when Gary's better, and hopefully by then I would have started something.
Okay. Well, you can email me in the middle of starting something and saying, I'm thinking about this or I'm thinking about that.
Okay.
Feel free to do that.
I will do that. Thank you. It'll keep me accountable as well to not just go and sit back down and just continue thinking.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I'm very good at that. So, yeah. But thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was really fun, Sonia. I'm real impressed with all that you're doing. I'm real impressed.
Thank you. And think and pray a little bit about if you fancy a trip to Africa.
I do fancy a trip to Africa. That's an easy question to answer. But I will think and pray about it, yes.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay, Sonia. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.